Welcome to Just Listen, a celebration of literature from Nashville Public Library. For more stories and poetry, visit our website at library.nashville.org. Please feel free to leave a comment or to make requests or recommendations. And now, for today's selection. Welcome back to Just Listen. Today we examine another one of the 300 short stories written by the French author Guy de Maupassant, who is featured here on Just Listen several times already, and a great favorite of this podcast, and considered by many still to be the father of the short story. We've already talked about Maupassant's private life and read a few of his stories set during the Franco-Prussian War. Maupassant was a representative of the naturalist school, depicting human lives, destinies, and social forces in disillusioned and often pessimistic terms. His stories are characterized by economy of style and efficient, seemingly effortless denouement. Maupassant's naturalism is often harsh and merciless when it comes to depicting human nature. He delighted in clever plotting and the surprising twist of an ending, and served as a model for Somerset Maugham and O. Henry in this respect. Today's story, while somewhat brief, contains much of the magic that draws the reader again and again to Maupassant's collection of stories. Vivid, believable characters caught in extreme situations, a wry author's critique of their humanity, and the characteristic surprise ending make this one of Maupassant's signature literary jewels. Don't allow the mention of divorce to fool you. Our author makes much of it before turning it on its very ear. And now, the sequel to A Divorce, by Guy de Maupassant. We begin. Certainly, although he had been engaged in the most extraordinary, most unlikely, most extravagant, and funniest cases, and had won legal games without a trump in his hand, although he had worked out the obscure law of divorce as if it had been a Californian gold mine, Maître Garoulier, the celebrated, the only Garoulier, could not check a movement of surprise, nor a disheartening shake of the head, nor a smile, when the Countess de Beaudemont explained her affairs to him for the first time. He had just opened his correspondence, and his slender hands, on which he bestowed the greatest attention, busied themselves in a heap of female letters, and one might have thought oneself in the confessional of a fashionable preacher, so impregnated was the atmosphere with delicate perfumes. Immediately, even before she had said a word, with the sharp glance of a practiced man of the world, that look which made beautiful Madame de Serpenoise say, "He strips your heart bare," the lawyer had classed her in the third category. Those who suffer came into his first category, those who love into the second, and those who are bored into the third, and she belonged to the latter. She was a pretty windmill, whose sails turned and flew round and fretted the blue sky with a delicious shiver of joy, as it were, and had the brain of a bird, in which four correct and healthy ideas cannot exist side by side, and in which all dreams and every kind of folly are engulfed like a great kaleidoscope. Incapable of hurting a fly, emotional, charitable, with a feeling of tenderness for the street girl who sells bunches of violets for a penny, for a cab horse which a driver is ill-using, for a melancholy pauper's funeral, when the body, without friends or relations to follow it, is being conveyed to the common grave, doing anything that might afford 5 minutes' amusement, not caring if she made men miserable for the rest of their days, and taking pleasure in kindling passions which consumed men's whole being, looking upon life as too short to be anything else than one uninterrupted round of gaiety and enjoyment, she thought that people might find plenty of time for being serious and reasonable in the evening of life, when they are at the bottom of the hill, and their looking-glasses reveal a wrinkled face surrounded with white hair. A thoroughbred Parisian, whom one would follow to the end of the world, like a poodle, a woman whom one adores with the head, the heart, and the senses until one is nearly driven mad, as soon as one has inhaled the delicate perfume that emanates from her dress and hair, or touched her skin and heard her laugh. A woman for whom one would fight a duel and risk one's life without a thought, for whom a man would remove mountains and sell his soul to the devil several times over, if the devil were still in the habit of frequenting the places of bad repute on this earth. She had perhaps come to see this Garoulier, whom she had so often heard mentioned at 5 o'clock teas, so as to be able to describe him to her female friends subsequently in droll phrases, imitating his gestures and the unctuous inflections of his voice, in order, perhaps, to experience some new sensation, or perhaps for the sake of dressing like a woman who was going to try for a divorce. And, certainly, the whole effect was perfect. She wore a splendid cloak embroidered with jet, which gave an almost serious effect to her golden hair, to her small, slightly turned-up nose with its quivering nostrils, and to her large eyes, full of enigma and fun, over a dark stuff dress which was fastened at the neck by a sapphire and a diamond pin. The barrister did not interrupt her, but allowed her to get excited and to chatter, to enumerate her causes for complaint against poor Count de Beaulemont, who certainly had no suspicion of his wife's escapade, and who would have been very much surprised if anyone told him of it at that moment, when he was taking his fencing lessons at the club. When she had finished, he said coolly, as if he were throwing a pail of water on some burning straw, "But, madame, there is not the slightest pretext for a divorce in anything that you have told me here. The judges would ask me whether I took the law courts for a theater and intended to make fun of them." And seeing how disheartened she was, that she looked like a child whose favorite toy had been broken, that she was so pretty that he would have liked to kiss her hands in his devotion, and as she seemed to be witty and very amusing, and as, moreover, he had no objection to such visits being prolonged when papers had to be looked over while sitting close together, Maître Garoulier appeared to be considering. Taking his chin in his hand, he said, "However, I will think it over. There is sure to be some dark spot that can be made out worse. Write to me, and come and see me again." In the course of her visits, that black spot had increased so much, and Madame de Beaudemont had followed her lawyer's advice so punctually, and had played on the various strings so skillfully that a few months later, after a lawsuit, which is still spoken of in the course of which the president had to take off his spectacles and to use his pocket handkerchief noisily, the divorce was pronounced in favor of the Comtesse Marie-Anne Nicole Brunet de Beaudemont, née de Tinchard de Peyotes. The Count, who was nonplussed at such an adventure turning out so seriously, first of all flew into a terrible rage, rushed off to the lawyer's office, and threatened to cut off his knavish ears for him. But when his access of fury was over, and he thought of it, he shrugged his shoulders and said, "All the better for her, if it amuses her." Then he bought Baron Silverstein's yacht, and with some friends got up a cruise to Ceylon and India. Marianne began by triumphing, and felt as happy as a schoolgirl going home for the holidays. She committed every possible folly, and soon, tired, satiated, and disgusted, began to yawn, cried, and found out that she had sacrificed her happiness, like a millionaire who has gone mad and has cast his banknotes and shares into the river, and that she was nothing more than a disabled waif and stray. Consequently, she now married again, as the solitude of her home made her morose from morning till night. And then, besides, she found a woman requires a mansion when she goes into society, to race meetings or to the theater. And so, while she became a marchioness and pronounced her second yes before a very few friends at the office of the mayor of the English urban district, malicious people in the Faubourg were making fun of the whole affair, and affirming this and that, whether rightly or wrongly, and comparing the present husband to the former one, even declaring that he had partially been the cause of the former divorce. Meanwhile, Monsieur de Beaudemont was wandering over the four quarters of the globe, trying to overcome his homesickness and to deaden his longing for love, which had taken possession of his heart and of his body like a slow poison. He traveled through the most out-of-the-way places and the most lovely countries, and spent months and months at sea, and plunged into every kind of dissipation and debauchery. but neither the supple forms nor the luxurious gestures of the Bayaderes, nor the large passive eyes of the Creoles, nor flirtations with English girls with hair the color of new cider, nor nights of waking dreams when he saw new constellations in the sky, nor dangers during which a man thinks it is all over with him, and mutters a few words of prayer in spite of himself, when the waves are high and the sky black. Nothing was able to make him forget that little Parisian woman who smelled so sweet that she might have been taken for a bouquet of rare flowers, who was so coaxing, so curious, so funny, who never had the same caprice, the same smile, or the same look twice, and who, at bottom, was worth more than many others, either saints or sinners. He thought of her constantly, during long hours of sleeplessness. He carried her portrait about with him in the breast pocket of his pea jacket, a charming portrait in which she was smiling and showing her white teeth between her half-open lips. Her gentle eyes, with their magnetic look, had a happy, frank expression, and from the mere arrangement of her hair, one could see that she was fair among the fair. He used to kiss that portrait of the woman who had been his wife as if he wished to efface it, would look at it for hours and then throw himself down on the netting and sob like a child as he looked at the infinite expanse before him, seeming to see their lost happiness, the joys of their perished affections, and the divine remembrance of their love in the monotonous waste of green waters. And he tried to accuse himself for all that had occurred and not to be angry with her, to think that his grievances were imaginary, and to adore her in spite of everything and always. And so he roamed about the world, tossed to and fro, suffering and hoping he knew not what. He ventured into the greatest dangers and sought for death just as a man seeks for his mistress, and death passed close to him without touching him, perhaps amused at his grief and misery. For he was as wretched as a stone breaker, as one of those poor devils who work and nearly break their backs over the hard flints the whole day long, under the scorching sun or the cold rain. And Marie-Anne herself was not happy, for she was pining for the past and remembered their former love. At last, however, he returned to France, changed, tanned by exposure, sun, and rain, and transformed as if by some witch's philtre. Nobody would have recognized the elegant and effeminate clubman in this corsair with broad shoulders, a skin the color of tan with very red lips, who rolled a little in his walk, who seemed to be stifled in his black dress coat, but who still retained the distinguished manners and bearing of a nobleman of the last century, one of those who, when he was ruined, fitted out a privateer and fell upon the English wherever he met them, from St. Malo to Calcutta. And wherever he showed himself, his friends exclaimed, "Why, is that you? I should never have known you again." He was very nearly starting off again immediately. He even telegraphed orders to Havre to get the steam yacht ready for sea directly when he heard that Marie-Anne had married again. He saw her in the distance at the Théâtre Français one Tuesday, and when he noticed how pretty, how fair, how desirable she was, looking so melancholy with all the appearance of an unhappy soul that regrets something, his determination grew weaker, and he delayed his departure from week to week and waited, without knowing why, until at last, worn out with the struggle, watching her wherever she went, more in love with her than he had ever been before, he wrote her long, mad, ardent letters in which his passion overflowed like a stream of lava. He altered his handwriting as he remembered her restless brain and her many whims. He sent her the flowers which he knew she liked best and told her that she was his life, that he was dying of waiting for her, of longing for her his idol. At last, very much puzzled and surprised, guessing, who knows, from the instinctive beating of her heart and her general emotion, that it must be he this time, he whose soul she had tortured with such cold cruelty, and knowing that she could make amends for the past and bring back their former love, she replied to him and granted him the meeting that he asked for. She fell into his arms, and they both sobbed with joy and ecstasy. Their kisses were those which lips give only when they have lost each other and found each other again at last, when they meet and exhaust themselves in each other's looks, thirsting for tenderness, love, and enjoyment. Last week, Count de Baudemont carried off Marie-Anne quietly and coolly, just like one resumes possession of one's house on returning from a journey and drives out the intruders. And when Maître Garoulier was told of this unheard-of scandal, he rubbed his hands, the long, delicate hands of a sensual prelate, and exclaimed, "That is absolutely logical, and I should like to be in their place."
Thanks for joining us. Tune in to another session of Just Listen by visiting your Nashville Public Library website at library.nashville.org.